Good morning, Sue Williams.
Oh, good morning, Jimmy.
And you are in, well, I'm in sunny Sydney. Where are you?
I'm in Lithgow, which is kind of a bit sunny, but it's really chilly.
All
I didn't
right,
bring
yeah.
enough clothes, I'm afraid.
Well,
Yes.
you're up in the mountains there.
That's right.
So today we are going to talk about what's happening down in Victoria. We're going to talk about the iCert ratings and how some people are making claims that are not absolutely true. And we're going to talk about a new feature that we're bringing in, which is lock up and leave, which is a bit different. I'm Jimmy Thompson. I write the Flat Chat column for the Australian Financial Review.
And I'm Sue Williams, and I write about property for Domain.
And this is the Flat Chat Wrap. So, Sue, are you aware of what's been happening down in Victoria with the Greens?
Yeah, the Greens have made a very strong stand, haven't they, really? And they've been saying that Labor has to commit to stronger reforms to ease the state's housing crisis,
Yeah,
in order that they support their package, their housing package.
because, well, first of all, the Greens hold a balance of power in the upper house in Victoria, so they can certainly slow down if, and possibly even block legislation. And you may recall that before Daniel Andrews retired, he came through with this housing package of they were going to build all these houses and they're going to demolish lots of old public housing and replace it with a mixture of public and private. So what is it
Which
that the
is kind of
group?
the way of, that's the kind of the way of the future, isn't it, really? Kind of having both of them together, not just blocks of public housing stuck away somewhere where it's all public housing tenants, but just kind of mixing them. That seems to be the very modern way to go. That's what's been happening in Europe a lot,
Yep.
and in some of the new developments around Australia as well. They kind of think, why would you isolate public housing tenants and make them feel different to everybody else as well? And it's nice to have a big demographic mix.
Look, glass half empty view of that particular proposal. You've got a lot of buildings that are really old, really run down, pretty much past their use-by date, and you're going to replace them with modern design, modern construction, newer, better buildings. Can you understand why the Greens are saying don't knock these down?
I guess they're worried that, in Sydney, we have a very bad habit of knocking down public housing, replacing it with private housing, and then putting those public housing tenants into other suburbs much further out. We've seen that
Right.
time and time again, really, because often they've, those buildings have been there for a long time, and they're often in really prime parts of Sydney. You look at Sirius right on the harbour
Oh,
there, just opposite the Opera House. Those apartments are going to be so expensive now. Originally, it was kind of a very brutalist public housing building, and now God knows where those people have been moved to, really. So I suppose that the reluctance is always that that might happen, that it might all be private housing and the public tenants have to go somewhere else. But if it is a genuine proposal that it will be mixed and there will be plenty of room for public housing tenants, then it would seem like a really good idea.
Look, it's one of these things. Like, I think the idea possibly is based on, well, the government already owns the land, so it's not like they've got to go and find spare bits of land to put new buildings in before they knock the old ones down. But I think it's an emotional thing as well, isn't it? Just to think we've got a shortage of housing. Why are we knocking apartment blocks down?
And I suppose, you look on from an environmental point of view, and there's lots of embodied carbon in those buildings. And so knocking it down and starting it again could be a huge environmental waste if those buildings are sound. But then, we've got some great architects who do some amazing adaptation work. But presumably they've looked at those buildings and thought they can't really adapt them. They've adapted Sirius, though. So some of the old towers, they could adapt those as well. When I used to live in London, I had some friends in Brixton who lived in this tower block, and it was really awful. And it was kind of a council block that had been sold to private people, but also there were still public housing people there as well. And it was a really ghastly block. It was a high rise, and there was always vandalism. People were always vandalizing the lifts. There was graffiti everywhere. And Brixton in those days was kind of a bit of a crummy area as well. It was a little bit dangerous, a bit edgy. Yeah. And then the local council decided to completely upgrade the building.
Yeah.
And they introduced great security. So not anybody could kind of wander into the lobby and go into the lifts. You know, you had to have a key to get in. You had to have a key to get to a certain level of the building.
Yeah.
And suddenly the building really improved dramatically. And my friends still live there like 30 years later and they love it. I mean, it's got, you know, it's a high rise, but it's got amazing views over London. Right. And now they're really kind of sought after apartments. So right. some buildings can be adapted and made an awful lot better. And maybe governments are perhaps not really applying their minds to that possibility as well. I don't know.
Well, you know, we kind of, like you said, you presume that they've looked at the possibility of adapting the buildings and improving them. Well, maybe they haven't. Maybe they just haven't.
Yeah,
that's you know, you're talking about politicians. You're talking about politicians talking to developers and the developers saying, well, look, it would be easy just to knock the whole thing down and start again. Well, maybe that would be the easier. It might even be the most economic way to do it. But is it the most socially efficient way to do it? I mean, that's a hope. We don't know. We should ask someone in Victoria if that process has been gone through. But what are the other things that the Greens are asking for? Because we know they have the balance of power in the upper house. That gives them a lot of power. What other things are they demanding?
One of the things they're asking for, more regulation over short stay, which is something probably quite close to your heart, Jimmy.
Yeah.
They're asking for a 90-day cap.
Right.
The owners' corporations have more power to sort of regulate their own buildings and ban them if they want to, and a mandatory public register of any short-term lets. So that would seem quite reasonable, really, to me.
Yeah, yeah. Look, I mean, well, let's set that aside for a moment. And the other things they're asking for is an increase in the tax on empty properties. Oh, it seems to be like there is already a tax on empty properties in Melbourne, in certain parts of Melbourne, but they're wanting it spread to the whole of the city or even beyond, so that empty properties in the country have to pay additional tax. I'm trying to think of what the other things are.
I think rent controls.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a big thing with the Greens.
Absolutely. They want a 2-year rent freeze.
Right.
And that's followed by, I think they want a permanent cap on rent increases as well, like the kind of cap that they have in Canberra at the moment.
Yeah, which has a better track record for rentals than anywhere else in Australia. And the rents are not gone up in Canberra by anything like as much as they have elsewhere. And that I think the cap is something like no more than 10% of the original rent is the increase or something like that. There is a percentage limit on the increase that the landlords can put on the rents in Canberra, which seems fair. It's not like they're saying we're freezing the rents, even though all other prices are going up. They're saying, no, it's got to be reasonable.
Yeah, and critics of that move always say, oh, yes, but it will deter investors from staying in the market or coming into the market. I don't know that it would. I kind of think, well, you know, a 10% rent increase is pretty good increase on your money, isn't it, really?
Yeah, and the thing is that it's, as far as I recall, and I hope somebody will correct me if I'm wrong, but the limit on rent increases in Canberra is something like the CPI. So you can go up by whatever the consumer prices are going up by, but to a maximum of 10%. So you can put a bit on top. You can make a bit more money. What you cannot do is make the ridiculous profits that some landlords are managing to get if they happen to have lucked into the right area with the right property.
Yeah. And I mean, you kind of have to really feel for renters at the moment. My nephew and niece both rent. And my nephew has just been forced to move out of the place where he rents with his girlfriend because rents have gone up so much and the landlord has evicted them and presumably so that they can increase the rents by even more. So, you know, they suddenly had to find a new place and that's really difficult to do as well. Whereas my niece who rents too, she had, as you know, Jimmy, because you helped her, she had a terrible water problem the other day. It was a burst pipe.
It was a burst pipe under the sink. And
So the place was flooded, the carpet. So finally they sent a plumber very, very late out because she didn't want to make a fuss because she's terrified that they'll put the rent up or evict her in exactly the same way. And we've got renters living in that fear and misery. And she's now living with very wet carpets and it's kind of the mold has started, I think, already because it started to smell. And I say to her, well, why don't you call the real estate agent and say, please, can you send somebody to dry the carpet and stuff? And she said, oh, no, no, I don't want to make a fuss because, you know, they were a bit antsy about sending a plumber over to fix the pipe even.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is a really unhealthy way to live. I mean, the rental sector should be a great alternative to buying a property for those people who want to use their money in a different way or don't have as much money. But, in fact, it's like a real – it's not even a second-class option, is it, really? It's kind of like a real fourth-class option.
Well, yeah, she was from her reports of the way she was spoken to by the rental agent, you know, who was just coming up with all these nonsense facts and figures about, you know, how long they could take, you know, 24 hours in an emergency, which is rubbish. And but the rental agents, I sometimes feel a bit guilty because I'm always hammering rental agents. But I have never come across one yet who actually gives a damn about the tenants. And all they're concerned is getting the rent paid on time and making sure that the owner isn't hassled. And in this case, the owner was overseas. And they're saying, we can't send a plumber around till we've spoken to the owner. Well, no, there's actually laws about that. But they just treat people with contempt. And I can understand why your niece doesn't want to hassle them over the carpets because she's worried that they'll turn around and say, oh, you're too much trouble and we can get somebody in here tomorrow.
Mm, yeah, that's right.
So of all these things in Victoria, what do you think is the one that's likely to get sacrificed? Because they will go to Labour and they'll say, we want, you know, A, B, C, D. But Labour is going to say, because they're politicians, well, look, we've got a bit of wriggle room here. So what?
Okay, well, one of the things they're asking for, which I think, you know, is highly contentious, really, is inclusionary zoning to require a minimum of 30% of public and affordable housing in developments of 15 or more homes on private land across the state.
Right.
So that's so if you've got a development of 30 apartments, because it's likely to be apartment development, which is a new development, then 10%, 10 of those in a block of new block of 30, 10 of those would have to be public and affordable housing.
Well, that's not going to happen, is it? I mean, that's I think you've identified the sacrificial lamb in these demands.
I think that's a tricky one. You kind of think, well, maybe in much bigger developments, you could certainly have at least 15%. But, you know, if you're doing a small development of 15 homes, 30%, what's 30% of 15, Jimmy?
It's about 30% of 15 is about four or five.
Yeah. So that's quite a lot because that's only a small development, really.
Yeah.
Developments might be really high quality ones.
Yeah.
That would make it quite difficult for developers, I would think, to make the kind of money they need to put those developments in place.
Yeah, I think that's one of the ones. It'll certainly get a tweak, if not be kicked to the curb. I'm just thinking back on the Greens. They've had a very checkered history when it came to short-term rentals, because back in the day when they were coming up with the legislation here, I think the big thing that was coming from the Greens was and the tenants union was that they wanted the right for tenants to be able to let their properties on Airbnb. And they were very pro-Airbnb. And I'm thinking of the MP for Balmain, you know, who raised the whole thing, his Greens MP here in Sydney, basically say you're pushing the idea of allowing Airbnb for everybody. And obviously, they didn't realize that this was going to absolutely hammer the rental market. And the people that they were representing were the ones who are going to suffer most.
Mm.
Now they've realized, now they've done a full 180 on that. And they're saying this is crazy, you know, and especially in Melbourne, where you've got like no restriction on short-term rentals at all. You basically, you've got to almost destroy the building twice before the government will ever step in And I don't think anybody has ever been prosecuted there under the laws that they have, even though, as we know, they have terrible problems with, you know, there's some really nice buildings in some really nice spots. And for instance, you'll get a traveling football supporters coming into Melbourne and they'll go, hey, look, there's all these apartments available on Airbnb in this one building. Let's all go in there. And then what they end up doing is, you know, they arrive on a Friday night. There's no public space in the building because it's not designed for that. So they take over the lobby and have a huge party in the lobby. Can you imagine living in a building like that?
Oh, it would be horrendous, wouldn't it?
Yeah. So they obviously the Greens have decided. I just wonder, I mean, maybe this is me with my glass half empty head on. That's one of the things that will be sacrificed when they get to the negotiating table with the Labour Party, if it comes to that.
Well, you never know, because federally, I mean, the Greens got an awful lot of criticism because they were holding back the federal government's huge housing package.
Yes.
But in the end, they kind of won really important concessions for affordable and public housing. So,
yeah,
you know, I don't know, well, maybe it's great to have that other voice in the political.
Oh, for sure. And I have to admit, at this point, I was one of the people who criticised the Greens federally for holding out for more, and they did the right thing. They're in a good spot in Victoria because they've got a new premier, and she's just finding her feet. So there is a vulnerability there, and maybe they will get more out of this than we imagine.
Yep, absolutely. Yep.
Okay, when we come back, we're going to talk about David Chandler's iCert ratings and how they are being kind of misused. That's after this.
We're huge supporters of David Chandler, the New South Wales Building Commissioner, and he seems to have achieved an enormous amount of change in the industry in New South Wales. And one of those things is by having an iCert rating to developers. So we can look at developers, we can look at the kind of developments they're creating and thinking, do we want to buy off the plan with this developer? Are they okay? Do they have a good track record for developing and for building? Are the buildings still standing? That kind of thing.
Yeah.
And he's developed that iCert rating system so we can see what kind of star developer we have. And we might go with a 3-star developer, which might be a bit cheaper, or we might choose a 5-star developer and know that everything hopefully is going to be okay. Or we might look and see there's a developer without any iCert rating at all, and then we will be much more cautious about buying an apartment with them. And I mean, it's a great system. And you kind of, at the beginning, a lot of people were saying, well, is this really going to work? But we have to say this really does work because both Jimmy and I mean, you probably remember, Jimmy, a few weeks ago, we went and looked at a new building and we were talking to one of the kind of development people there. I don't know who they were really. They were kind of hired by the developer to show people around. And we said to him, oh, has this building got an iCert rating? And he said, yes.
Well, actually, David, no. Sorry to correct you, but he offered the information that...
Oh, that's right. You're right. Absolutely. He said, and in addition, this building has a 5-star iCert rating. And we both said, really? I mean, because, you know, I think there's only one 5-star rating been issued to Mirvac, I think.
But, I think Lendlease might have one as well.
A Fraser's property might have one too, like these really big, top-notch developers. So we were kind of surprised because this was a much smaller developer. And he said, oh, yes, David Chandler was here the other day. And we said, really? And then I think you said something, Jimmy, about knowing David Chandler.
Yeah, I said, hey, I know David, and I'll give him a call and ask him what he thought of the building.
And then the guy immediately blanched, stepped back a bit, and said, actually, on second thoughts, it wasn't David, it was his deputy.
Yeah, whom he named. He said, it was Matthew Press, Matt Press.
Yeah.
And he said, it was him. And I said, yeah, I know Matt as well. I'll give him a call. And
and then when we came back home, I checked the iCert page to look at ratings. And lo and behold, the developer was nowhere to be seen.
Yeah.
And then I emailed the developer and said, is it true you have this? And there was silence for a while. And then they finally came back and said, well, actually, no. And I said, but your representative at your site insisted this was true. And they said, oh, no, he must have got confused between an ICERT rating and when they issue the certificate of occupancy.
Yeah. But that was the weird thing, was he came out with that, like, you know, he... Yes. We didn't say,
and he was obviously
ISO.
Telling everybody. He wouldn't have just told us. He had no idea who we were. So he was obviously telling everyone. And other people may have been impressed by that and may not have checked.
Yeah.
So if anybody's in any doubt that this ICERT rating is really working and is really as sexy as many people say is, I think there is no doubt whatsoever now, because developers are actually pretending they have one even when they don't.
Yeah. I'm just looking at the ICERT page, which is in the Housing and Construction Building Commissioner page on the New South Wales government website. I'm looking at how do they decide on the ICERT, which is I-C-I-R-T. And this is one of these things that really annoys me, because they've decided to list all the criteria by which they judge a developer or a building. And they've had it so that the six criteria all start with C, right? Which is very clever and very stupid at the same time. So the six things are capability, conduct, character, capacity, capital, and counterparties. All right. What does that mean? Capability, I guess, means that they are able to do the building that they say they're going to do. Conduct, that is how they've behaved in the past, maybe. Character, have they ever been to prison or run away to a foreign country when people tried to get their defects fixed? Capacity, is that different from capability? Capital, have they got enough money? Counterparties, do they have any dodgy friends who've run away to foreign countries when people had to ask to have their...
I would never have been able to guess what counterparties were. I thought it meant, do they have lots of people who have parties and they're a bit wild and they dance on the counter?
Yep, that was my second choice. That was my second choice. So, I mean, come on, guys. We don't need to have everything starting with a C. How about putting something on your website so people can actually, like, even stupid people like me can understand what it is that you're going on about? I mean, really. Anyway.
I had advice from a web designer and who said, oh, this would look good. But the whole idea is that it makes sense to people, really.
And they're probably sitting there in their office going, what's the difference between capability and capacity? And somebody's gone, oh, it doesn't matter. Nobody's going to pay any attention to this. Well, hey, guys, we're paying attention. Get yourself sorted out. For goodness sake, it's too important to mess around with stupid alliteration. So anyway, yes, the point we're making is it's working because developers are claiming they've got it when they don't have it. Because I remember right when this development started, I said to them, are you going to apply for the ICERT thing? And they said, no, because we're pretty confident in our product, but it's a big process and it's an expensive process. And we really feel we don't need it, right? Mm. So now they've decided maybe they do need it. So they'll just say they've got it, which is very, very naughty of them. And I wonder how many other people in the industry across New South Wales are saying, oh, just tell them we've got 5 stars, you know. I have a feeling that having been alerted to this, the building commissioner's office is checking out some of these people who they're not putting it in their literature, they're not putting it on their advertising, because that was one of the things we said, you know, you've got a billboard outside with saying, you know, all these apartments are for sale. Why don't you put your 5 stars on there? And the guy said, oh, yeah, we'll look into that. Well, yeah, the reason there's no 5 stars on there is because they don't have them.
Yeah, interesting. I mean, it's funny because if it had said 4 stars, we both wouldn't have been so amazed. We might have accepted it, but 5 stars.
Yeah. I just remember the look on that guy's face when I said, oh, yeah, I know David Chandler. I'll give him a call. It's like, he was going backwards so quickly, you could almost hear the beeps. When we come back, we're going to introduce a new feature, which we hope works for our listeners, which is lock up and leave. We'll talk about that when we come back. So One of the things in our recent survey that we did, our recent poll about what people like about living in apartments, was security and the ability to lock up and leave and go on holiday, and provided you haven't left any pets inside, come back and find everything pretty much the same as it was when you left. Right. So we've got another website, which is called Mild Rover, mildrover.com. It's a travel website. Do a lot of travel writing and have done a lot of traveling. I, a bit less so, but I've still dabbled in that area. So we've got this website, which basically is a mixture of stuff that we've done and stuff that we've seen and special deals that have come up. They come across our desk, and they come across our desk every day. So we're going to start this thing. Once a week, one of us is going to pick a favorite trip off the Mild Rover website. So this week it's you, Sue, and what have you chosen?
Yeah, well, I looked through all the deals that there are, and I really liked a deal from Luxury Escapes in the Kimberley. I mean, I just adore the Kimberley. The only problem is it's really expensive to get there. I mean, as you know, it's really far north of WA, yeah. And it's a pretty remote place. It's quite hard to travel around. I've been to the Kimberley many times and I've just adored it. There's some amazing places there. And now as well, there's some real luxury places too. Mm. You know, there's lots of fabulous lodges you can stay at. I think the first time I went, we were staying in kind of little motels and you had to double lock the door because it was a bit creepy.
Well, somebody walked into our hotel room once. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. But nothing happened, but they just got the wrong room. But bizarrely, they had the key to our room. But there's fantastic places like Berkeley River Lodge and stuff now to stay there. And the scenery is just spectacular. I mean, it's the real wild frontier of Australia. And I think sometimes Australians go there much later in life, you know, when we're a bit cashed up.
Yeah,
but we're kind of too old to climb the hills and go up and see all the secret Aboriginal art galleries, the fantastic rock art. You have to clamber up the hills, and sometimes you go out on small boats and look at the wildlife and marvel at some of the incredible ochre scenery. And I think some of us leave it too late. And I kind of think it's great to go when you're still very able and you can walk, you can climb, you can kayak, you can do those really amazing things out there. And so I just saw this deal and I thought, wow, that's pretty good. The deal is actually 5 nights from just under $10,000.
Right. And this is in the Berkeley River Lodge, which looks pretty fantastic from the pictures.
Absolutely, yep. And it includes domestic flights from Darwin and Kununurra there.
All right. Well, that's good.
I think, they say the deal was valued up to $16,250. So it's quite a big chunk off. I mean, they're pretty good about putting together accommodation packages and getting good deals. And I just think, you know, going there is one of the most extraordinary adventures you can have in Australia. And I would really heartily recommend it. And the good thing is you live in an apartment, you can lock up and leave, and you can go there, and it's just absolutely amazing. And it's the exact opposite of living in an apartment in Sydney or Melbourne or Brisbane. It's just, you know.
Except you're in a really comfortable lodge.
Well, that's right. Yeah. But you've got, you know, a million stars rather than,
yeah.
You know, four, five, bicep-styled building.
good callback. So, it looks great. So that's our website, mildrover.com, like Wild Rover, but with an M. It's for the seasoned traveler, for people who've been there and done that and would like to go back and do it properly. And I think that really fits the bill. So we are going to do this once a week, briefly just say, hey, check out what we've got on that website, because there are some great deals there. There's some terrific stuff coming through.
As we know, we're all really mad about travel at the moment because we just want to get out, and it's just fantastic that the world has opened up and Australia has opened back up again. And so, if you can get it done, if you can get it for cheaper, then even better with the rising cost of living.
Right. Okay. Well, Zoom is about to kick us off because we're too mean to have a proper subscription, and we're using the free service. Thank you, Zoom. It's been great talking to you, Sue.
Yeah, fantastic. Thank you. I miss you, Jimmy.
Yeah, well, same here. We'll catch up very soon, I believe. But if anybody's interested in the story about the Victorian Greens, that's on the website. And I'm writing a piece about the iCert 5-star ratings for my column this week in the AFR, which will also end up on the website next week. So plenty for you to read. And when you've done all that, get over to Mild Rover and plan a holiday. Do it now. All right. Thank you very much, Sue, for coming on Zoom. And thank you all for listening. We'll talk to you again next week.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Flat Chat Wrap podcast. You'll find links to the stories and other references on our website, flatchat.com.au. And if you haven't already done so, you can subscribe to this podcast completely free on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite podcatcher. Just search for Flat Chat Wrap with a W, click on subscribe, and you'll get this podcast every week without even trying. Thanks again. Talk to you again next week.